Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Today we'll be talking kosher soul and closing out our month-long tribute to Black history. But first up, food headlines. And in the studio first, because I had to have him do with the food headlines, is Michael Twitty. Michael, how do I describe you? Food historian? You're also many things.
I tend to go with a culinary historian.
Culinary historian Michael Twitty is in the studio. Welcome to High Grease, Michael.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Welcome back, actually, because you've actually been on air before.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So let's get into it. Food headlines. First up, Oscar recap. Did you watch the Oscars last night?
I was at the tail end of an Oscar party. Last night I was actually at a soul food dinner, which was held the same day as Oscars, go figure, and I got the last like hour of the Oscars.
Okay, so I guess I should ask you, did you see any of the movies, particularly Southern Beast of the Wild, that were in the Best Picture category?
I saw Django.
You saw, you know, we need to talk about it. You saw Django. Do I remember any food scenes in Django?
You know what? They only had one, and that was the scene where they had the white angel cake. If you remember that, that was the only food that was really featured on its own.
Well, I remember there were, towards the end, there was a dinner scene.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where the white angel cake was?
That's it.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And it's interesting that when they dramatized the cooking, then most, you know the deal with most plantations, the kitchen was an outbuilding. It was very rare to have the kitchen as an attached room, mm-hmm. and that's almost never the case the further south you go. So it was interesting they had the kitchen as an attached room with the stew. You know, I noticed every little detail. The stew stove and the this and that. Yeah. So it was interesting how they dramatized that, but it really wasn't very accurate to what it would have been.
So are you happy that Quentin Tarantino won, I think, for best screenplay?
I'll put it like this. I'm with Dick Gregory. It was an amazing release. If you're in the living history business, and I was telling the story last night that when one plantation that I did a program for Christmas, you know, Plantation Christmas, one of the docents came up to me and said, "You don't have to tell them all that history. Just tell them that you're the cook and be done with it." And I was like, "See, I almost had my Django moment right there."
So I cannot believe that you didn't see Southern Beast of the Wild.
I didn't catch on to it till the end. Now I have to see it because I heard about young lady who was in it. I think she's beautiful. I think she was, you know, obviously superb. Now I have to see it. But it was one of those things where I saw it on Tavis Smile. I heard about this, but I really was so busy this year with the cooking gene and everything else that I just hadn't really had time to go to the movies that much.
A lot of great food porn in Southern Beast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And that's in Louisiana?
Yes.
I'll see.
Yeah. Southern Beast. So, next up on food headlines, the James Beard long list came out last Monday. Have you had a chance to look at it?
Let's see.
You didn't look at it, Michael? I want to know what's about the Maryland. Well, I'm very curious about some of the chefs from your area, because Michael Twitty, you're originally from Virginia, Maryland, D.C. area. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know if you've gone to some of those restaurants that are on
the list. Is Woodbury Kitchen there?
Let's see. Do you know the chef's name?
Spike Jetta is the...
This list is so long. I don't know. So they should be on the list?
That's
what you're saying?
Definitely.
So let me see if that's the Southwest. I'm going to give a shout out to Todd Richards in Atlanta. I don't know if you know Todd. He made the long list. He's at this shed. One of the few African-American chefs that's on the long list
for
James Beard 2013. So, West, let me see. Southwest. So, what do people consider D.C.? Because it's really not the South.
Stop. Don't start.
So, what do people consider
Don't
there?
Start. Nothing won't be nothing.
What do you think that is?
We have, well, you know, The problem is that we're expected to be American miniature.
Oh, so I found it. Well, Mid-Atlantic.
Ugh, I hate that.
It's how the James Beard Foundation defines the New Jersey, Virginia, D.C., Baltimore area. So for D.C., you have, what's this, R-A-C-I-K-A, Raiska is on there. Charleston is a restaurant that's on there. You have to look at this list. The Roosevelt in Richmond, which is one of the hottest towns, I feel, now. What do you make of these lists, Michael? Do you think it's validation or...
You know something. I like to go... You know Weaver D's. We talked about Weaver D's earlier.
Yes, I'm from Athens, born and raised.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Weaver D's is a landmark. Weaver D's is a place to get something real. I would be more likely to be found at Weaver D's than I would be at, you know, another restaurant, you know, put on that list. I mean, I don't know. For me, I think that there should be more balance between a diversity of restaurants, between farm to table, between high end gourmet, between what people really eat in a given area. Now, granted, I wouldn't put Ben's Chili Bowl on that list.
But I will have to say that Weaver D's was recognized. I can't remember the exact name, but it's more like a legend, permanent place in the United
States.
There you
go. That's
award. And he was awarded that maybe about 5 or 10 years ago or longer. So there are a few. And I almost want to say that Ben Chili Bowl was actually recognized by the James Beard Foundation, too, for that same thing.
It's like, well, if you go to a place and there's pictures of people on the wall from way back when.
Yeah.
That's a different story. But I don't know. I don't really know. I tend to go to those restaurants more when I'm outside of my area than when I'm in it, because it doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I've connected people at Woodbury Kitchen and other places in Baltimore, et cetera. And I go there and it's fantastic. And you get to know the people, you know, the farmers who bring in the food and all of that. Then it's a much richer experience. I got to know you. I got to know you to know your food. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Know what hand and feet you put in it. In the pot.
I totally understand that. So you're here in town. You've been here since when?
Since last night.
Oh, you got here last night. Oh, see, I thought you'd been here the entire weekend.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Always these drive-by visits to New York.
I know. I thought you'd been. Last time you were here, we went to
420 Blackbirds.
Yeah. So what have you explored? Seems like you stay in Brooklyn a lot when you're in town. What have you explored?
Thanks to my cohorts today. I've seen more Brooklyn ever before. Usually I get stuck in Forest Hills in Manhattan. It ain't much in Forest Hills. No disrespect, Forest Hills people. But it's really cool to see, like, the different food scenes and worlds in New York. It's very different in D.C. and Baltimore. We do have historic neighborhoods, and we do have certain enclaves, but it's not the same. You certainly can't go to, like, an ethnic food. Like, we went to Sahadi today. I was blown away. We met Charlie Sahadi and Jackie... knows him and introduced us to him, and it was just amazing to talk to somebody who has that kind of history, who could, you know, can say, I was here 50 years ago and I can tell you what it was like in my father's time, which was 30 years before I showed up. And it just, you know, they're getting that kind of legacy, and it was just amazing. We don't have places like that down there, you understand. I wish there was, but we don't have that.
What else have you done?
Oh, man. First of all, I gotta say
this. Look, I have to tell you this. I didn't tell you this. Welcome to Bushwick.
Oh, see, I'm in Bushwick the first time.
Welcome to Roberta's Bushwick.
Right?
You felt like you were going to, like, something. You were like, am I still in New York? What do you think?
I'm kind of interested in this kind of corrugated iron wood, kind of like old warehouse, kind of rejuvenated world that I'm not. This is actually, it reminds me a lot of, like, the clubs in Baltimore.
Yeah, y'all are infamous for that. The go-go club. But Michael, did you realize these are two shipping containers?
No.
Yeah, these are two shipping containers in an L shape that's been turned into a studio.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm well, you know, Jackie led us back here, and I said,
you keep saying Jackie. I have to tell people Jackie Gordon. She's been on the show before.
There you go.
Jackie's hanging out in the studio. Maybe she'll chime in later.
She led us back. I thought we were just coming here. I said, why are we going here? She's like, boy, the studio is in the back of the restaurant. Yeah. And it's absolutely incredible to see how everything's laid out.
Glad
to
have you.
This is true repurposing of things that could have been thrown away.
Totally. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more Michael Twitty. If you're listening live, you can follow him on Twitter at Kosher Soul. Keep listening. We'll be back shortly.
You're listening to Soul Tub by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. In the studio, live and in the flesh, we have Michael Twitty, culinary historian of all things black food ways and even Jewish food ways.
That's it.
So, Michael, I have to ask you. You are, at this point, a bona fide star.
Now.
You were on Bizarre Food with Andrew Zimmer. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
You did a great job. I was like, oh, look at my friend Michael Twitty. It was so, you were funny. You were extremely witty and funny. And you were completely yourself.
That's what everybody tells
me. Yes, and you really did a great job of conveying who you are and what food ways are really important to you. You got to give me the behind the scenes scoop on the show.
Okay, I'll tell you on one leg what went down. Right during when we actually found out we were actually going to go on the whole cooking gene exploration, I got a phone call from Minnesota, and the producer calls me up. Well, she didn't call me. She emailed me. She emailed me, and I called her back within 45 seconds. In fact, it showed up on my phone. I read the email, and within less than a minute, I immediately pressed the little button to call her. And she says, who is this? And I said, it's Michael Twitty. She says, I just emailed you like 20 seconds ago. I said, I know. And the answer is yes. So they really wanted to get a sense of what DC food culture is like, okay, you know, for us locals. And she said, I read your blog and I think that you'd be great for the show. I think that your, you know, mix up of Jewish and African-American soul food is really cool. Would you like to do this? And they also sourced from our blog, I might mention, we talked about Woodbury Kitchen and Denzel Mitchell, who's an African-American farmer, for the Baltimore show. And so that was cool. So I had to actually fly out of my trip from New Orleans to D.C. and then go back to Birmingham the next morning to do the taping. And it was like five minutes, right? Show.
I always watch Bizarre Food. I felt like you had a lot of time. You covered a lot of ground.
It was 5 minutes distilled from 5 hours.
So it wasn't longer than 5 minutes? It felt like really longer than
It was basically a five-hour day distilled into 5 minutes on screen, which is what they usually do. But we went to Florida Avenue Grill, and I got to tell you, behind the scenes on that.
Your face during
that's my chilling face.
Oh, my God. That was hilarious.
That is real as you can get. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I couldn't hide it. And the funny part about it was is that when we're outside the restaurant and ready to go with the cameras, people recognized him and stopped him for pictures. But when we got in the restaurant, it's a small place, and there's all these all the cameras, and he's in there. Nobody flinched. They kind of got the feeling that, oh, they're doing another something here. And people were like, okay, yeah, but I promise you this. When Andrew Zimmern ordered those chitlins and they came out, it was like a sitcom moment. All them black folks in the restaurant they stopped and looked at him like, you ain't really going to eat that, is you?
Yeah, I hate chitlins.
The moment.
Did you say chitlins or chitterlings?
I said chitlins.
Yeah.
I did not say chitterlings. Actually, last night, I got to tell you this, girl. Last night on at the dinner, it was very funny because the menu was very beautifully printed out. And they said, Hoppin' John. They said, pot liquor like L-I-K-K-E-R. Yeah. But then they said chitterlings.
No, they're chitlins.
They're chitlins. There ain't no way around it.
So, Michael, if folks have not seen that episode of Bizarre Foods, can they go online? Can you buy it on iTunes?
You can buy it on iTunes. I'm sure they'll, you know, replay in one of those cable marathons. But basically, for those who have not seen it, there's two basic parts. We go to Florida Avenue Grill. we talk about the southern roots of Black Washingtonians, and then we go to Common Good City Farm, shout out to them, in LaDroit Park in Washington, D.C., and we make the kosher soul rolls. Everybody wants the recipe.
Yes, I was just about to ask you that. I want the recipes to that.
So you might be part of a select group, but that's not. But Jackie's looking at me like,
Better yet, why don't you just make them for me?
Oh, see that there. Here we go. That we can do. That we can do.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break and talk more with Michael Twitty. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
You don't have to cry no more. You don't have to sigh.
This one's called All You Gotta Do by the California Honey Drops on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Let me love you, baby, and I'll make everything all right. Oh, yes, I will. You don't have to love, you know.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
In my arms, you don't have to love.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can check all of my show archives at heritageradionetwork.org or go straight to iTunes and or Stitcher and put in Hot Grease. We have Michael Twitty, culinary historian, in the studio today. We're chatting all things. We're talking Oscars. We're talking
everything.
Bizarre food. Let me ask you this before I get into my first question. How do you define soul food, Michael?
Oh, wow. So I think I always say soul food is not slave food. And soul food is not necessarily West African food. Soul food is the cuisine of the great grandchildren of enslaved people.
I like that definition.
That is a very specific definition because it's them looking back. You know that old adage about like the grandfather immigrates, the father forgets, the grandchild remembers. Mm-hmm. That's what soul food is. And if you look at it from that perspective, from that very limited perspective, it makes perfect sense. But if you try to cast that moniker on, say, for example, what the great-great-great-great-granddaddy ate,
yeah,
it's not going to work. Or what the great-great-great-great-grandson's going to eat, it's not going to work. But it is, you know, our unique sort of ethnic temple, our own culinary museum to our identity. And from that perspective, it's right on time.
I love that definition. You need to write that up for me so I can start saying. I will give you your credits, Michael.
All right.
Okay.
See?
So, was it this summer, you did a really brilliant and amazing thing. You went all around the South. The project was called the Cooking Gene Project. What was the biggest takeaway? You went to how many different plantations and cities? God. And
wow, it was, you know, it just... We're still kind of in it because there are a lot of places in the so-called Mid-Atlantic. Don't go there with me. Where we have to go. For example, we still have not gone to Appomattox. And I don't know if I told you this story. But the quick story is that one of my great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers was at Appomattox with his brother.
Now, what is Appomattox?
Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia was where the Civil War ended,
uh-huh,
where Lee and Grant signed the surrender. And they were they didn't know anything. He was a domestic, and his brother worked in the field. And they were with their so-called owner at Appomattox Courthouse. They did not know why they were there. They were both teenage boys. And they said they saw one man in a blue suit and one man in a gray suit walk out and shake hands. And when those two men shook hands, their master told them, you're free.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think that my ancestors were the first of us to find out that the nightmare was over, that the dream had begun.
So that is the final stop. Is that the final place that you want to wrap up?
I don't know if it's ever going to be wrapped up. I'll be honest with you, Nicole. We still have to go to the plantation Frederick Douglass grew up on, the Eastern Shore of Maryland. Beautiful mansion, but they've also done archaeology on the quarter there. And we have a lot of places to go to, and we have a lot of places further south to go to as well. We still need to go back to the Lowcountry, and I don't know how we're going to do it. We're going to go back to Lower Mississippi Valley, because Louisiana's kicking. But I guess the greatest takeaway I learned was that I thought this was all about my past.
Mm.
This is about my future. What was the greatest moment? Was it James Meredith eating with us in Mississippi and coming to the presentation and telling stories about his struggles? Was it meeting Leah Chase and talking with her for 30 minutes in her kitchen? Was it Mildred Covert with the kosher Southern Creole food that she writes about at the ripe age of 90-something in New Orleans? I mean, was it, you know, 70-some master Creole chef from Mobile? I can't tell you what that massive moment was for me. But I guess it really taught me that I do have a terroir. I do have a landscape. I do have just as much a homeland as any chef from somewhere else. And I guess, I think I told you this before we were launching the camp, and thank you for promoting it. But I think I told you this before, but I mean, I'm looking at Anthony Bourdain, looking at Andrew Zimmern, and all these people come on the show talk about what it's like to be from France or Italy and love your province. Well, now I found my province.
Wow. Powerful. So what's next for you, Michael? Book, TV, you really need a show.
Well,
and a book too, really. You're hilarious. Very smart, and a lot of information that you have bottled up inside of you. What's next?
Well, I want to put it out to the universe that when the show came on, it was really beautiful, I got to tell you, because people from all walks of my life, I feel really lucky. My parents, family members, my students from all the Hebrew schools I've ever taught, for kids who are now out of college who I taught 10, 12 years ago, people I went to high school, elementary school, and middle school with,
former
teachers, everybody's writing, say, I know you, oh my God, I can't believe it. But I really love to do a show in the near future while I still have the youth and the legs to do it, where we go around doing historic food at different places. Not just in America, but around the world. Doing the different methods, showing people what was eaten, and on an exciting kind of level. But I think that what you saw in that show was me just being me being real. It's like, you know, when you come from a complex identity, it's not the labels you put on yourself. It's the heart you give that shows you what you are. And so that's what I want to do more of. But The Cooking Gene will be a book. It will be a book. There are too many lessons, too many life lessons, past life regressions that were involved in that project that need to come on out. So that will be a book. And we're talking, I'm dealing with some folks right now to get some other things, culinary history is written, so we can begin to tell the story of food from slavery to freedom.
Well, your fan club is waiting.
Oh, see. There you go.
We're going to take a quick break, Michael, and we're going to come back. And this is the last show. We're ending Black History Month on Hot Grease today. But you know, I'm Black History 365.
That's right.
But hey, officially ending it today. Keep listening. We'll be back with more Hot Grease.
Well, I'm tired of laying around this town. Tired of laying.
You're listening to Bye Bye Baby, I'm Gone by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. Also, thanks to my engineer today, Joe G. For just tuning in, we are chatting with Michael Twitty. He's alive and in the flesh on Hot Grease. So, Michael, today is the last episode of Hot Grease, because Thursday It's like the end of Black History Month. Didn't it go by quickly?
Oh, always.
And so all month, I have been asking all of my guests to reflect on food and Black people and our contributions. I think it's important. Some people are like, Black History Month, it should go away. But I want to play this, not a game with you, but this word association.
Right.
I'm going to throw out and give you a name of a person that's I consider legends or trailblazers in food, and you tell me what comes to mind. The first person, Vertimae Grosner.
Vibration.
Oh, yeah.
That's the word.
Yeah.
Vibration.
Yeah. I actually posted, I don't know if you've seen it, every day for the last, 25 days, I've been posting a cookbook cover by an African-American artist. And today I posted her. And she came out with that book, Michael, in what, the early 70s?
Mm-hmm.
Early 70s. And she's still around. I think she may be in her 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that word for her. Sylvia Woods.
Wow. Legacy. Plain and simple. Legacy.
Yeah, that
someone who planted seeds and knew that she would not see the full harvest, but did it anyway because she had children, grandchildren, and a whole nation to feed.
Mm. I put George Washington Carver on the list because the first time we met in person, you reminded me of George Washington Carver, and you know why, right?
Because I had that cotton boutonniere, right?
Yes, Michael Twitty had a cotton boutonniere. And a lot of people may not know this, but Dr. George Washington Carver wore a fresh flower boutonniere every single day.
Right.
So I had to put him on the list because I think George Washington Carver. George Washington Carver, what word comes to mind?
Reverence. And I tell you why I use that word, because he had a relationship with nature that approached the mystical. And he said something so fantastic. He said, if you love something enough, it will give up all of its secrets to you. That's what I never forgot about George Washington Carver. He said, if you love something enough, it will always give up all of its secrets to you.
Mm.
Isn't that something?
Jessica Harris.
Prolific. I mean, it's just a fact. You know, all the recipes, all of the records, all of the everything. A very prolific recorder of, you know, a grand global moment in our food history.
Edna Lewis.
Oh man, tradition. You know, Edna Lewis was not Deep South. Edna Lewis was Old South.
Mm.
And, you know, that her cookbook, I'm blanking on the Country Cooking.
Mm-hmm. Taste of Country Cooking.
Taste of Country Cooking is on my bookshelf above my computer at all times. It is literally, if there's one cookbook that I have above my desk at all times, 24/7, it's the Taste of Country Cooking. That's it. I mean, my folks are partly Virginia folks. It's like a Bible.
I'm going to add someone else to the list who I think the entire month, every time I ask someone the question of who's next, who's building a name from themselves. I saw Brian Terry retweet the show. But Brian Terry, when you hear that name, what do you think?
Future. I can't tell you how much I admire him. I'm proud of him for setting a new tone and saying that it's not wacky to take our food in a new direction. I think he's saving souls and bodies with the vegan soul. Now, I'm not vegan, but you know what? I've tried more vegan stuff because of Brian Terry than I ever would have otherwise. I didn't think it was a part of us. And he said, no, this is totally part of us, and this is what we need to heal ourselves. And so when I think about him, I think about this totally new direction. And, you know, I think we have a whole bunch of people we could have mentioned. Leah Chase.
I was about to ask you, who else should I ask?
Oh, man, Leah Chase is just, she's just the mother of us all. Austin Leslie in New Orleans, mm-hmm. of, you know, blessed memory. Brother Austin Leslie was the guy who put together that turkey that burns people's houses down every year, though I guess I shouldn't say that. but he really was the real Frank's Place. And, I mean, let's give honor to Byron Hurt for the beautiful Soul Food Junkies film, which you've had him on the show, and I've done some things with that. But I mean, it's we're a whole family. We have all these different voices, all different perspectives, and every one of them is needed. I think the best analogy I can make is that we failed as a people when we put all our hopes and dreams on one leader. And we failed as a people when we put all our hopes and dreams on one person. When all of us work together, and it's going to take a whole nation to heal a nation. And when all of us put our hands into the work, that means all of us can reach and teach each other. And we don't have to worry about one person saving us because we already saved ourselves.
Yeah.
So that's what it's all about. Everybody needs to learn, teach, cook, grow, feel, and heal.
Well said. And it's just, so, I just have to say this. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Said a lot of prolific things today. I have to go back and listen and write them down, Michael. But thank you for being on the
thank
show.
You
and
so much.
I'm going to have to add you to the list.
No,
I mean, you are really showing who we are, that black people are not just one thing. And you said it best. We all need to be doing something. And
that's
when
right.
we're all doing something and not just leaning to one person, we can really transform and continue to lift up, black food ways. So happy Black History Month.
Happy Black History Month. To you.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Listeners, if you want to follow Michael Twitty, tell us your website.
Afroculinaria, AfroCulinaria.com. It's my main blog, AfroCulinaria.com, and MichaelWilliamTwitty.com as well.
Yeah, because there's a Michael Twitty.
Yeah, but he Conway Twitty's son ain't got nothing to do
oh,
with
that's
me.
Who that is?
And I'm tired of people saying, are you Conway Twitty's son? Like, no, honey.
That
it ain't
is
like
hilarious.
That.
So, Michael, you know, anytime you're in New York, you can swing by Hot Grease.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'm going to have these folks help me find where it is because, you know, I need. We Tanya and me talked about the Harriet Tubman app we're going to introduce to Apple.
Yeah, give it up for Harriet.
Yeah, shout out to Tanya Hopkins. We got to have you back on the show. Food Griot.
Griot,
I'm sorry. Food Griot. We're going to have you. And Jackie Gordon's in the studio. You've heard Jackie before. Hey, Jackie. For bringing Michael.
Delivering.
Yeah, delivering yes. Michael yes. here.
It took two of us to deliver this man here on time.
Listeners.
We're glad we did.
Thanks so much for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can join me here every Monday live at 3:30 Eastern Time. But until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.